Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, horror. Later on, it's The Sealed Book from 1945. But first, suspense. From CBS, from November 15th, 1959, it's the story, The Companion.
Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. This is the story of two women alone in a house during a storm and what they do to protect themselves from fear. In a moment, The Companion by Walter Black.
Mrs. Hughes?
Yes. Miss Lord?
That's right.
Come right in.
I'm sorry if I'm late. I couldn't get a taxi, so I took the bus.
Oh, no. You didn't take any time at all.
I got the impression you wanted me to get out here fast.
Yeah, I did. You're a local girl, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, you must know my husband, Kent. You were both probably in high school at the same time.
Yes, I remember him. He was a year ahead of me, but that was some time ago. Where is my room, Mrs. Hughes?
Oh, just on the hall there. I'd like you to meet my mother first.
Your mother? I thought you were alone.
Well, I might as well be. Poor Mama's been in a wheelchair ever since she had her stroke 4 years ago. This way, please. Here's Miss Lord, Mama. This is my mother, Mrs. Stinson.
How do you do?
How do you do? Did you say Miss Lord?
That's right.
Somehow I expected someone a bit older.
May I unpack now, Mrs. Hughes?
Yes, of course. It's at the end of the hall.
Mrs. Simpson, are these your jewels?
Yes. Why?
If I were you, I wouldn't leave them out on the bureau. They're beautiful. They might get lost.
Well, I hope you're satisfied, Lois.
Mama, don't act as if I were being selfish. I got her out here as much for you as for me.
Move the wheelchair closer to the window, Lois.
Oh, did I ever complain before about Kent going off on his business trip?
If you want the truth, yes.
Well, I may have complained a little. I never did anything about it. I can't stand it anymore, always being left alone.
Not all alone, dear.
Yes, I know.
I know. I'm a cripple.
I didn't say that, Mama. You don't have to look so reproachful. Each time Kent's gone off, it's gotten worse. Not that he cares. He's gone away again and again without giving me a thought.
Now, Lois Hughes, you stop being so dramatic. Kent's a fine person and a good husband, but he's got his job to do.
Well, then he ought to change his job. I think he wants to travel, doing whatever he does. Oh, you think I exaggerate, don't you? Well, all I want is for my husband to come back home every night. Is that so terrible? Does that make me a bad wife?
Oh, now, baby. Mama never thought that.
Oh. Well, did you ever think how lonely it is out here for me? Buried like this out in the country? I get scared, Mama, sometimes. And then you with your precious heirlooms lying around.
Oh, they're memories, Lois. That's all I have.
Yes, but what if someone tried to get in here while Kent was away? Well, people are still robbed, you know.
Stop talking that way. Are you trying to frighten me?
I'm trying to be sensible. Those jewels are a temptation to any man who wants to walk in and pick them up.
Well, I've had some of those pieces since I was 16, Lois. That diamond brooch belonged to your great-grandmother.
Yes, Mama, I know, but what good would they do you if they were stolen? Hmm. Well, even Miss Lord noticed how careless you are about them.
All right. I don't want to argue about it. But I still don't see what that woman is going to do around here.
Care. She doesn't do anything. She'll be here. That's all I hired her for.
Who recommended her?
Peggy Martinson. She stayed with her when she was sick last year.
I don't like her.
You only saw her for 1 minute.
She's too cold. She looks right through you. If you don't mind, I think I'll just have my meals sent in here. The less I see of her, the easier I'll feel.
Want me to take your supper tray, Mama?
Mm-hmm. Have you eaten?
Oh, I just had some coffee. I'm too jumpy to eat.
Well, this storm is enough to make anyone jumpy. Oh, listen to that rain coming down.
It's only the storm, Mama. It's Miss Lord.
Why? What's she done?
Oh, nothing, nothing. It's the way she acts, that's all. It's what you said. She's cold. I feel uncomfortable around her.
What has she done?
Nothing, nothing really. Nothing at all. I didn't want her to do anything. I just wanted to feel safer with her, but I don't. She keeps staring at me in that cold way of hers.
Well, then, for heaven's sakes, get rid of her. Call a taxi and have them come pick her up.
Won't that look awfully, awfully funny?
Well, what do you care? This is your house. Pay her for the day and get rid of her. Tell her you've changed your mind.
I never should have called her. It's true, I do exaggerate. We don't really need anyone.
What's the matter? You want me to look up the number?
There's no dial tone.
Well, jiggle the hook.
It's dead.
Oh, it can't be. The storm isn't that bad yet. Maybe it's just this extension. Go use the one in the front hall.
Yes. Yes, Mama. I'll be right back. Oh, Miss Lord. I thought you were in your room.
I was closing the living room window. Good night, Mrs. Hughes.
Mama! The wire! It's been cut! Mama! Mama!
What? What is it now, child?
The phone. The phone. She cut the main cord. I almost caught her at it.
Did she say she did it?
No, I didn't ask. I was frightened. Besides, she'd gone to her room.
Why should she do it? Why?
Don't you see? Without the phone, we're helpless.
She wouldn't do anything, honey. Why would people know she's here with
us? Who knows, Mama? Nobody.
They do, too. The taxi driver.
No, she took the bus. She walked up from Broad River. She said she couldn't get a taxi.
What are we going to do?
I'm going to talk to her, Mama. Anything's better than not knowing.
Lois.
Yes, Mama.
Be careful, honey.
Miss Lord, it's me, Mrs. Hughes. Here I am.
Oh, you'll never know what the last couple of minutes have been like. What are you carrying your handbag for?
It's not mine. It's hers.
But whatever.
Stop asking questions, Mama, and listen. I knocked on her door and there wasn't any answer, so I went in. She wasn't in her room, even though she had said goodnight. Her purse was on the dresser, so I opened it up and... Look, Mama, look.
A gun. Don't touch it. It might go off.
Why would she be carrying a gun, Mama?
It's my jewels. She's after my jewels. Oh, baby, do you think if I offered to give her one of the smaller pieces, she'd leave?
You mean bribe her?
It's worth trying.
Is that my handbag, Mrs. Hughes?
Oh, yes.
What are you doing with it?
I thought it was mine. I have one like it.
You have one like it in my room?
Well, I was looking for it, and I knocked on your door.
May I have it? Thank you. You didn't put your jewels away, did you, Mrs. Stinson?
Lois, ask her.
Miss Lord, my mother and I, we're both very grateful for your coming up here and staying with us, and we'd like to give you a little token. After all, my mother hardly ever wears any of her jewelry, and you seem to have admired them, so... Why don't you pick out one of the pieces you'd like and take it?
You want to give me jewelry?
Yes, yes, that's right, just because we're so grateful. Aren't we, Mama?
Yes, yes, we're grateful.
So just tap yourself. I know it's a little unusual, but we're very grateful. If you like, Mama will write a little note saying it's a gift.
I don't accept gifts.
Good night.
Quick, lock the door. Why did she refuse, Mama?
She saw right through us, for one thing. Why should she take one piece when she can murder us in our beds and take everything?
No. No, she wouldn't, Mama. See this?
What?
The gun. She didn't even know.
Put it away. Oh, just the sight of it scares me half to death.
All right, Mama. But at least she hasn't got it anymore. Now I'm going for help.
Lois, you can't leave me alone.
I'll leave the gun with you.
I could never use it.
Mama, that woman is a psychopath.
You mean she's insane?
Yes, I think she is.
But you told me yourself Peggy Martinson recommended
her. Well, psychopaths act just like anybody else most of the time. Mama, I'm going to lock your door from the outside because I have to go.
Oh. Be careful, Lois. And don't forget your boots.
Yes, Mama.
Maybe once you get out on Barrett Road, maybe a car will pass. You could get a ride.
Yes, Mama.
Be sure and lock the door from the outside and take the key with you.
Yes, Mama. She must be in her room.
Careful.
I will.
Who is that?
Go away. The door's locked. It's locked. And now go away or I'll scream. Oh, Lois, why didn't you say it was you?
I didn't want her to hear.
Why haven't you left? What happened? Did she catch you?
She didn't have to, Mama. Mama, the doors are locked.
The back door, too?
Yes.
The cellar?
Yes.
Well, there must be a key. You have the one to this room.
But that one was in the door.
But isn't there another key someplace?
Yes, on 10th key ring.
Oh, dear God.
I thought of the windows, but the casements are too small.
Oh.
Mama, we're prisoners. We're prisoners, just as surely as if we're locked up in jail. Mama, when I think of all the awful things you read about in the papers, you never dream they can ever happen to you. It's like a nightmare.
Sit down, child.
What?
We've got to think of some way out.
All right, Mama. I'm sitting. Now go ahead, think of a way out. Oh. Only 10 o'clock. I thought it was later.
Lois, hand me my box of stationery.
Mama, what for?
What time does your milkman show up?
6 or 7, why?
I can write a note. Wrap it up in 3 or 4 sheets of paper and some envelopes. Throw it out the window. Even if the rain does get to it, he'll be able to read it. And then he has to pass my window to get to the back door. What's the matter? It's worth trying.
No, no, it's not, Mama. He was here this morning. He won't come again until day after tomorrow.
There. There now. There.
Mama, you know who's responsible for all this. Kent. He didn't have to go off and leave us alone. He has that new assistant he could have sent. But he wanted to go. He wanted to get away from me.
Stop that. Now you're getting hysterical. Kent is a good husband and you're lucky to have him.
Listen.
What is it?
I thought I heard the doorknob rattle. You know, if she really wanted to, she could break down the door.
Oh,
those panels are like tissue paper.
Lois, take that gun.
There, Mama.
Take it. Lois, don't touch the trigger.
But, Mama.
Don't argue with me. You've got to face that woman. You've got to make her leave this house.
I've never handled
it. I don't care. You've got to do it. You said yourself that she could break down the door. Do you think that she'll just sit around and wait until somebody comes and she has to leave? This is the only chance we have.
All right, Mama.
Don't let her get close to you.
No.
Oh, that's my good girl. And Lois, if you have to pull the trigger, aim at her leg. Oh, heavenly Father. Please,
It's me, Mrs. Hughes. I have to see you.
Yes? What are you doing with that gun?
I have to talk to you.
Put that gun away, Mrs. Hughes.
Please. I have to talk to you.
Well, what do you want? Please put that gun down.
After all I've gone through, don't be ridiculous. Well, sit down, Miss Lord.
What is it you're...
Sit down. That's better.
Please, Mrs. Hughes, what have I done for you?
That's right, Peg. I like that.
But what have I done? Please, don't you...
It's too bad. Ken can't see you crying. He hates women who blubber, you know. That's what he calls it. That's why he's never seen me cry. Although I've felt like it often enough.
Listen,
don't
me...
move. It's better. Oh, and don't bother screaming. There's only my mother to hear you. And she'd think it was me anyway. And besides, if you screamed, it might make me so nervous. And the gun would go off. And then I'd have to tell Mama we fought for it. And it went off accidentally.
What do you want?
Oh, come now. You're a big girl. Why ask foolish questions?
You. You cut the phone cord.
Well, of course. I did everything else, too.
But why? I've never done you any harm.
I've never done you any harm. You've only tried to ruin my life, that's all. You think I don't know about you and my husband?
Your husband?
Not that you're the first. Every woman who sees him tries to take him away from me. Even that smug little Peggy Martinson, she thinks I'm blind. Well, I'm not. And you, you poor little fool, lying about remembering him from long ago. Well, you think I didn't know you were sweethearts in high school and still are? You think I don't know he'd been sneaking off to meet you on the sly? Oh, how you must have laughed at me. How sure you must have felt to walk in here, into my home.
I didn't know Kent in high school, but it was never serious. I swear to you, I haven't seen him a dozen times since then.
Oh.
It was only high school dating. I've never been in love with him.
Go on, lie some more. Tell me you never sat with him in a station cafe, either.
Well, I can explain that. We bumped into each other accidentally. We had a cup of coffee while he was waiting for a train, that's all.
I don't understand what he sees in you.
Please, Mrs. Hughes, he doesn't even know I'm alive.
Oh, very apropos. Because you won't be much longer. Nor will any of those other girls he runs off and meet. Are you ready, Miss Lord?
Give me that gun.
You don't understand, Mama. She's trying to take Kent away from me.
So that's it. You weren't worried about my jewels?
Or about us?
She's trying to get Kent, don't you see, Mama? I'm beginning to. You locked the door and cut the phone cord, didn't you, Lord?
But I've had to,
and
Mama.
And frightening me, that was all a part of your plan, too,
wasn't it? I'm sorry, Mama.
I have seen this jealousy of yours build and build, but I never dreamed that you... Lois, child, your husband loves you. There's nothing for you to be jealous about. He's coming back.
Yes, forget her.
No. Hey,
everybody.
Hey, in here.
For her.
In here, in the spare bedroom.
What's the matter with home? Warm up down the lines. I've been calling since 5:30, but... Diane, what are you doing here? What's going on? Lois, what are you doing with that gun?
Lois thinks that you and Miss Lord... our sweetheart.
What? You don't have to lie anymore. Nancy Adams saw you with her at the station cafe.
Saw me with... Once. I ran into her accidentally. We had a cup of coffee, that's all. Tell her, Diane.
I tried to. You're away so much. And I know I'm not glamorous or very exciting.
You're my wife and I love you. Look, baby. Honey, look, the trip was postponed until next week. How about coming with me? We'll take a couple of extra days just for us.
You really want me to?
Very, very much.
Oh. There. It's all right now, baby. From now on, everything is going to be all right.
Suspense. You've been listening to The Companion, written for Suspense by Walter Black. In a moment, the names of our players and a word about next week's story of Suspense. Heard in tonight's story were Elizabeth Lawrence as Lois, Virginia Payne as Mrs. Stinson, and Rita Lloyd as Miss Lord. Listen again next week when we return with The Thimble, a story of murder with a motive for everyone, written by Alan Sloan from a story by Eliezer Lipsky. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from November 15th, 1959 on CBS. Virginia Payne, part of the cast, known for years on air as playing the role of Ma Perkins in the show of the same name. She actually began playing that elderly character at the age of 23. You are listening to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Now time for a broadcast of the sealed book penned by the writers behind the Mysterious Traveler series on Mutual. It's Robert Arthur and David Kokin's story, I'll Die Laughing, heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on May 27th, 1945.
The Sealed Book. Once again, the keeper of the book has opened the ponderous door to the secret vault, wherein is kept the great sealed book, in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. Here are tales of every kind, tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds, strange and terrible beyond all belief. Keeper of the book, I would know what tale we tell this time. Open the great book and let us read. Slowly, the great book opens. One by one, the keeper of the book turns the pages and stops. Ah, the strange story of three people who ventured into a long-lost cavern. A cavern cursed by the ancient Aztecs. A tale called I'll Die Laughing. The tale, I'll Die Laughing, as it is written in the pages of the sealed book. It begins in one of the big old houses on Nob Hill in San Francisco. John Dayton, a huge, fat, middle-aged man, is laughing at a story that Dr. Smith, his personal physician, has just told him.
Oh, say, Doc, that's a good one. I'll remember that.
You'd better remember the other things I told you, too, John.
I will, Doc, I will. Thanks for dropping in.
That's quite all right. Bye, John.
Goodbye.
John, was that the doctor?
Yes, dear.
What did he say? Did he think the dizzy spells you've been having were serious?
Oh, of course not. He said I'd live to be 90. He just told me to stop working so hard at the office and learn to take things easy, that's all.
You have been spending too much time at the office, John.
Well, I'm thinking of taking a vacation. A long vacation. Now, please excuse me, dear. There's someone upstairs in the study waiting to see me.
John, who is that horrible-looking old man waiting up there for you?
Well, I'll explain that later, dear. Oh, say, when Harvey gets here, send him right up to the study, will you?
All right, John. Harvey, come in.
Hello, Laura. John phoned. Said he wanted to see me. Is he in?
Yes, he's upstairs now.
Laura, listen. Is it about us?
Oh, no. He doesn't suspect anything. This is about something else. He has a perfectly weird old man up there with him now who...
Yes, I know. An old prospector named Gippy Gordon. I sent him to John.
You sent him? What do you mean?
Well, this Gordon came to the office last week. John was out, so I talked to him. He told me a ridiculous story about a lost Aztec treasure in a secret cave in New Mexico. I knew it was just the kind of thing that John would love, so I told Gordon to come and see John here at the house. And I warned him to be sure not to mention having spoken to me.
But why, Harvey?
I want John to decide to go looking for that treasure and to take us along.
I don't understand.
Darling, John is like a boy in many ways, but he isn't a complete fool. If he finds out about us, we'll both be out in the cold. You'd lose this lovely mansion and all the things you enjoy so, and... I'd lose my job as lawyer for the John Dayton Enterprises.
Oh, I wish we could make a clean breast of it. Tell John we love each other and that...
And live in a garret someplace on love and a crust of bread? No, Laura, it wouldn't work.
No, I suppose not. Oh, what are we going to do?
Suppose something should happen to John. An accident, say.
Harvey, you don't mean
Hello,
that...
Harvey, is that you?
Yes, John, I'm on my way up now.
Well, hurry up, old man. I've got something mighty interesting for you.
Right away, John.
Harvey, this is Gimpy Gordon, the prospector. Gimpy, this is Harvey Lewis, my legal advisor.
How do you do?
Howdy, Mr. Lewis.
Harvey, I've just paid Gimpy here $5,000 for a map showing the location of a buried Aztec treasure in a haunted cave.
What?
Yeah.
Ooh, I'd better sit down on that one. Well, where is this treasure?
Well, Harvey, you've heard of the Devil's Cavern, haven't you? Tremendous cave mentioned in early historical records of the Southwest, but apparently lost for the last 300 or 400 centuries.
Why, yes, I read something about it. It's supposed to have miles of winding passageways in which a man could wander for weeks without finding a way out.
That's the one, and I found it.
Well, the gist of the story is this. In 1554, a Spanish looting expedition led by a nobleman named Domendez had acquired a great wealth of jewels and gold figurines, which Domendez put into 3 small brass-bound chests.
I see. Go on, John.
Well, this treasure just made Domendez greedier. A story whispered to him by an Aztec priest led him to Devil's Cave. And Domendez and his men entered the cave only to find out they'd fallen into a trap. Well, the Aztecs attacked them, and all were killed but Domendez. He found his way into a great central cavern about a half mile from the entrance of the cave. And in that cavern, there's a natural shaft, like a well.
The Devil's Well, that's the name of it. It bubbles and gurgles in a way to drive a man mad.
Oh, take it easy, Gimpy. Take it easy. Well, Harvey, Domendez reached this Devil's Well. And when the Aztecs closed in on him, he threw the treasure into the well and leaped in after it himself. So the priest sealed up the cave and put a curse on it.
A curse? Oh, come now, John. You don't believe in that.
Oh, it's true. It's true, Mr. Lewis. The curse was that nobody who went into the cave to get the treasure could ever get out again alive. They was doomed to die there.
I see. But you say you went into the cave and came out again alive, so it can't be much of a curse.
Oh, but it is, Mr. Lewis. It killed Pedro, my Indian, and it's still after me. I wouldn't go back there again if it was worth a million.
But assuming your story's true, how could anyone find their way into the cave and out again?
There's a string marking the route, Mr. Lewis. 2 months ago, me and Pedro found the entrance. We tied the string to a rock and went in, letting it unroll behind us. Took us a week, it did, to find our way to the big room where the Devil's Well is. But we made it.
Huh? And then what happened?
Well, I had 100-foot rope and some big hooks. We fished around in the well for the chests, and by, We drew one of them up.
You actually fished up one of the treasure chests?
Yeah. It was about so long and so wide and 6 inches high. I shook it and we could hear the jewels rattle inside of it.
Where is it now? What happened to it?
Well, when Pedro seen the chest, he grabbed for it and tried to push me into the well. Well, I ducked and Pedro got hold of the chest when all of a sudden, he fell over into the well with it.
Well, what did you do?
Oh, I run for it before the cave and the well could get me, too. I followed the string back, and I didn't stop till I was outside. But all the way, I heard Pedro calling to me for help. And now whenever I hear the well, I hear him, too, calling to me, still calling to me.
Well, Harvey, that's the story. And making all due allowances, I think it's well worth investigating, don't you?
Say, it is an interesting yarn, John. And I think it'd be a lot of fun to look into it, whether we find any treasure or not.
Good. Then we'll do it. You and me and Laura. It'll be a vacation for all of us.
Oh, no. No.
What is it, Gimpy? What's the matter?
Well, he looks scared to death.
The devil's well. I hear it again. It's calling me.
Oh, come now, Gimpy. You're letting your nerves get the better of you.
No. I hear it, I tell you. Listen.
We don't hear a thing, Gordon. It's just your imagination.
No. I hear it. I hear it.
Gimpy. Oh. Gimpy, help me. Save me, Gimpy.
It's there. In the well. I hear it. And Pedro's calling to me. I hear him.
Oh, nonsense. It's just your imagination, Gimpy.
No, he looks as if he's going to faint.
Gimpy.
There he is.
Help me. Save me.
That's Pedro in the well. He's calling to me.
John, grab him. Good grief. He's dead.
And now to continue the story, as it is written in the sealed book. The doctor's examination showed heart failure to be the cause of Gimpy Gordon's death, not an ancient Aztec's curse. In spite of the tragedy, John Dayton went ahead with his plans with undiminished enthusiasm. Laura, his wife, protested, but Harvey added his persuasion to John's, and at last she agreed to go on the treasure hunt with them. A week later, they were ready. John's car loaded with all the necessary equipment.
Harvey, I've hardly had a chance to speak to you all week. Before John comes and we start out, you must tell me, What are you planning?
Why, Laura, darling, we're just going on a treasure hunt. An expedition from which I expect to return with a fortune.
A fortune? From a lost cave? You're not serious.
Oh, but I am. It'll be a fortune that I can claim for my own after we return. A very beautiful fortune. You, my dear.
Harvey, you don't know what you're saying.
But I do. It's the only way out. What I had in mind when I sent Gimby to John in the first place. I've been thinking for a long time that John would have to have an accident.
Harvey, I'm afraid.
You mustn't be. Just leave everything to me. I'll know what to do when the time comes. And when we get back, we'll be able to be together always.
Yes, I know. But suppose someone suspects.
No one will. After all, on an expedition of this kind, accidents are bound to happen. No one will be able to prove a thing against us.
And just imagine how Gus Wilson and Duck Arnold will look when we invite them over and show them a couple of chests full of old Aztec jewelry. Their eyes will pop right out of their heads.
John, for heaven's sake, stop laughing. I can't stand it anymore.
Oh, what do you mean, stop laughing? Why, Laura, what's wrong with laughing? I like to laugh. And when I die, I hope I'll die laughing.
Well, if you don't stop it, John, I'll die.
After that, all three were silent as they drove. The afternoon of the second day, they turned off the highway and, carefully following Gimpy's chart, threaded their way through a series of narrow canyons until they reached a spot between two towering cliffs. Beside a great black rock gaped the dark mouth of a cavern. John directed the unloading of the car, then he led the other two a few feet into the mouth of the cavern until he found there the end of a slender white string that led into the cave, losing itself in the darkness.
Look, there's the string. Well, was old Gimpy Gordon telling the truth or not?
Certainly looks as if he was.
We're not going to explore the cavern now, are we? Let's wait until morning.
Oh, nonsense, my dear. Now is as good a time as any. Harvey, you and Laura go ahead with your flashlights. Laura can carry the rope and you carry the food. And I'll bring the grappling hook.
All right, John. Ready, Laura?
Now, wait just a second. I ought to try this little special device I brought along to make sure we don't get lost.
Huh? Bottle with a spray top and a colorless liquid in it.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't get it, John. What's that for?
I told you. It's to make sure we don't get lost. Now, watch. I'll spray some of the ink in this bottle on the wall of the cavern. There. Now, I've sprayed a spot on the wall. Now, shine my flashlight on it.
Well, I don't see a thing.
That's because the ink is a special invisible type. You see, the ink only shows up when you look at it through special glasses. Now, here, Harvey, put on these colored glasses.
All right, John.
What do you see?
Why, George, you're right. The ink has a greenish glow when you look at it through the glasses.
Ah, you see, it works. I'm going to use this bottle to spray the ink on the walls of the cave, and it'll mark the proper passage.
Oh, John, you always have to amuse yourself with something silly like that, don't you?
It isn't silly. It'll give us a double check on the right route so we can't get lost. Now, you two start. I'll bring up the rear, and every 10 feet I'll squirt a little of this stuff on the wall. Then we won't have to worry about Gimpy's string.
Uncertainly, the little party groped its way forward through winding passageways that opened constantly into dozens of other passages. They would have been lost in no time but for the slender white string that led them ever deeper in the echoing depths. Half an hour later, they came out into a great chamber far below the surface. Huge stalactites hung from the ceiling, glistening damply in the beams of their flashlights. They advanced a little way into the underground chamber and put down the ropes and other equipment they were carrying. A low gurgling and moaning of water echoed through the cavern.
That's the sound Gimpy mentioned, Harvey. It means we've reached the Devil's Well. Look, over here.
A round opening in the floor of the cabin. Yes, this is it, all right.
John, be careful.
Don't worry about me, Laura. You stay there with our equipment if you like.
Say, water isn't gurgling anymore.
No. Oh, but Gimpy said it came and went. Must be an underground stream causing it. Say, Harvey, shine your light down here. Let's see how deep it is.
100 feet at least.
And to think there's a fortune down under that water. By George, before we go back, what do you say we drop the grappling hook down and see what we can find, huh?
Now?
Yeah, sure.
All right, John. I'll admit I'm kind of curious myself.
Harvey, get me the rope and the grappling hook, will you? We may bring up one of those chests the first try.
Of course, John. It won't take a second to try our luck. Laura, have you got the rope there?
Yes, right here. Harvey, you're not going to do it now?
Yes, I am. There's no sense in waiting. We'll be out of here in 30 minutes, free to live our own lives just as we wish.
Have you got that rope yet, Harvey?
It was tangled, John. I'm bringing it now.
Just keep your nerve, Laura. It'll be all over in a minute.
Right.
Here's the rope, John, and the grappling hook, too.
Oh, fine. Just give me a hand with it. Harvey, what are you doing?
Just giving you the rope, John, but not quite as you expected.
Yeah. Now, try to move your arms.
Well, you've bound my arms to my sides, Harvey. What's the meaning of this?
I'll tell you what it means, John. It means that you're about to die.
Die? Have you gone crazy?
You fool. Why do you think I arranged this silly treasure trip anyway?
You arranged it? Why, I arranged
it. That's what you think, but you're wrong. Old Gimby Gordon came to me first with his ridiculous story, and I passed him on to you. I knew to give Laura and me the opportunity we needed to get rid of you.
Laura, is this true? Are you in this with Harvey, this murder plot?
Harvey, hurry. Please hurry.
Oh, so it is true. You two brought me here to kill me. And I thought... What a joke on me.
You won't think it's a joke for long. Because in just a minute, you're going down in that well, John. The story we'll tell is that you got tangled in the rope, tripped and fell in. And if anyone comes to fish out your body, John, it was an accident.
If anyone comes to fish up my body. Oh, that's a joke, Harvey. You don't know how good a joke it is. But you will. You will.
Stop laughing.
Now make him stop. Goodbye, John.
He laughed when you pushed him, Harvey. He always said he'd die laughing, and he did. He did.
Laura, pull yourself together. It's all over now, do you hear? It's all over.
Yes, Harvey, I'm all right. Oh, let's get away from here. Let's get out of here. No!
And now to continue the story as it is written in the sealed book. Laura and Harvey, with a guilty feeling in their very souls, started back to the entrance of the cave, following always the trail of the slender white string. But their progress seemed so slow, all too slow in their hurry to get away from what they were leaving behind in the Devil's Well.
Harvey, hurry. Can't you go any faster?
No, Laura, I don't dare to. If I tried to go any faster, the string might break and
What is it? Why have you stopped?
I've come to the end of the string.
What do you mean you can't have? We're not anywhere near the entrance yet.
The string ends here. It's tied to a piece of rock.
No, no, it can't end here. It must be broken. Look for the other end of it.
Oh, here's the rest of it, neatly coiled up on this ledge.
Oh.
And here's an envelope underneath it. A fresh white envelope.
It was, John. It's one of John's jokes, that's it. Quick, what does it say?
Dear Laura and Harvey, for some time I've known what was going on between you two. It's time you were both taught a lesson. When old Gimpy Gordon came to me with his story, I saw my way clear to do so. And I have worked out a plan. A plan that will be in operation when you read this letter. This is my plan. As we enter the cave, I shall send you two on ahead. I shall follow and remove the string from the entrance of the cave to the point where you find this letter. After we have reached Devil's Well, I shall contrive somehow to slip away from you two, leaving you alone together.
Oh, no.
You will, of course, follow the string back toward the mouth of the cave. But when you come to the end where this letter is, you will be forced to stop.
Oh, John planned this. He wants to kill us.
No, wait. I shall be able to find my way in and out of the cave by means of the special luminous ink, which I shall spray on the walls as I go in. My colored glasses will enable me to see the ink, where your eyes will see nothing. I shall leave you alone in the cave for 12 hours. And if, at the end of that time, you can still stand the sight of each other, I shall cheerfully step out of the picture. For during those 12 hours, you should get well acquainted with each other's true character.
What a beast he is.
You ask why I do this. Because Dr. Smith has told me that at best, I can hope to live not more than 6 months.
No.
And under the circumstances, I don't much care what happens.
No.
My little joke on you is all the punishment I care to inflict. At least you'll always remember that a man is not a fool just because he likes to laugh a lot. Signed, John Dayton. That's all of it, Laura.
Oh. Harvey. Harvey, listen. He's laughing, Harvey. He's laughing at us.
Oh, stop it, Laura. It's just your nerves. You've got to get a hold of yourself, or we'll never get out of here.
We never will, Harvey. That's why John laughed when you killed him. That's why he's laughing now.
Laura, pull yourself together.
He played a joke on us, and now he's laughing.
You fool. We're going to get out of here. I tell you, we are.
We're not. Never in a million years.
We are, I tell you, the same way John planned to get out. He marked the walls of the cavern with special luminous ink, didn't he? Well, those marks will lead us out, too, do you hear? They'll lead us out.
No, they won't. You have to have special glasses to see it.
Yes, but we'll go back to the well where we left the equipment and get the glasses. And then we'll be all right.
Oh, no, he won't. That's why he's laughing. Because he had the glasses in his pocket when you pushed him in the Devil's Well, Harvey. He has them in his pocket now.
And that is the tale of I'll Die Laughing, as it is written in the sealed book. For days, Laura and Harvey wandered through one corridor after another, seeking the entrance of the cave. John's laughter echoed in their ears, as time and time again they ran into blank walls. Weeks later, a searching party found their bodies lying a scant 100 yards from the entrance of the cave. And now, keeper of the book, before you close the great book, show us the tale we tell next time. This one. Ah, yes. Why, this is amazing. It's the tale of a mad killer who lived alone in a great country house. That is, until two murderers came to live with him. A tale called Design for Death. Be sure to be with us again next time when the sound of the great gong heralds another strange and exciting tale from The Sealed Book.
The Sealed Book, on Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode, heard on May 27th, 1945. And that brings to a close this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.